From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we are revisiting via the magic of tape recording some of our celebrity guest games. We have to do it via tape because I don't think they'd come back after what happened the first time. In September of 2008, Carl and I, along with panelists Mo Rocca, Kerry O'Connor, and Tom Baudet, ventured to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where we met one of South Dakota's finest native sons, former Senator George McGovern. McGovern was a hero in World War II. He's an upstanding and honorable patriot. But, of course, most people know him as one of the biggest losers in modern political history, the guy who got thrashed by Richard Nixon, 49 states to one, in 1972. Richard Nixon! Of course, McGovern had a handicap. He had to run as a Democrat.
Well, Democrats are an ornery bunch.
Yeah.
They're also people of conviction who love to express those convictions, even if it is 3 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah. In the morning. Yeah. So, and we didn't pay any attention to television schedules. I mean, what's prime time got to do with giving the most brilliant acceptance speech in American political history.
As you say, people of conviction.
Where I'm from in Illinois, that has another meaning, but that's... President Nixon refused to debate you.
That's correct.
What reason did they give?
I think he was terrified.
What was the reason he gave?
He never gave a reason, and for some unexplained reason, the press never wrote him on that very hard. He used to talk about the bias of the liberal press.
No, really?
I never could find that liberal press.
Yeah, well.
And, but he never really gave an explanation for that. We never even had an explanation for things like... What were seven people, two of them carrying White House passes, doing with their burglar gloves, their break-in tools in the Democratic National Headquarters again at 2 o'clock in the morning?
I heard something about that.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting to me... people forget this. People think of Watergate and the scandal as happening post-election, but actually the break-in happened and was publicized before the election.
June 17th.
Yes.
A month later, we had the two conventions. It was still 3 months away from the national election, but no particular fanfare was raised about it.
Now, it is, of course, true that about 2 years after Nixon beat you in the 72 election, he had to resign in disgrace for the things that he had done during the election campaign. And to my knowledge, you never, you know, indulged yourself by standing up in front of the American people and saying, "I told you so." And I would like to invite you now, if you like, to do just that. Go ahead. Indulge yourself.
Okay.
Be venal. Be venal.
Okay.
Go.
I've never said "I told you so" because I learned a long, long time ago, even before I got into politics, the one thing you don't want to say to somebody who already feels betrayed and injured is, "I told you so."
Right.
That's not a good idea.
But aren't you the betrayed and injured party here?
The whole country was.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I know after your defeat in 72, you ran for president twice more, if I'm not mistaken.
Briefly.
Briefly. Mm-hmm. You ever thought doing it one more time?
I think now I've had about enough experience to do it.
You think so? You think you're finally ready?
You know, maybe 4 to 8 years down the road, I'll try it again.
I think so. Senator McGovern, we are so pleased to have you with us. We've invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
Now that's how you win an election.
Senator, history shows that you were the better man in the 1972 presidential election, but a fat lot of good that did. Clearly, You lacked the killer instinct. So we're going to ask you three questions about some more hard-hitting political tactics as practiced in American elections. We're going to ask you three questions taken from the book Anything for a Vote by Joseph Cummins. Get two questions correct. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is the senator playing for?
He is playing for Dave Munson from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
All right, here's your first question. In 1824, Andrew Jackson was aiming for a rematch against John Quincy Adams, who had beaten him 4 years before. This time, Jackson was playing hardball. Among the successful attacks launched against the incumbent president were which of these? A, that President Adams smoked cigars in the European mode rather than chewing his tobacco like a true American? B, that President Adams had actually brought a billiard table into the White House for immoral purposes? Or C, that President Adams was secretly and shockingly a Reformed Baptist rather than the Methodist he claimed to be?
Probably the last one.
That he was a Reformed Baptist rather than a Methodist, which would have been all kinds of hoo-ha back then.
Yeah.
No, actually, it was the billiard table.
Was it the billiard table?
Yeah.
Us Methodists are against all of those things.
Really? Well, apparently. So were the American people. Jackson supporters called the billiard table, quote, gambling furniture. This worked, and Jackson won handily. All right, well, here's your next question. See what we do in this one. Sometimes slander doesn't work. For example, Martin Van Buren won the election in 1836, despite what bump on his road to the White House? Was it A, his opponent slandered him by calling him a, quote, Dutch American? B, he was arrested for riding his horse drunk through Washington? Or C, frontiersman and national hero Davy Crockett accused him of being a cross-dresser?
Maybe the first one?
The first one, they tried to slander him by referring to him as a Dutch American, mm-hmm. which would have been a term of disapprobation back in the day.
Yeah.
That's what you think?
I think so, yeah.
It was actually Davy Crockett called him a cross-dresser. Crockett, it turns out, I didn't know this myself, was sort of the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth of the day. He wrote a scandalous sort of basically hit book about Van Buren. In it, he wrote, and I quote, Martin Van Buren is laced up in corsets such as women in town wear, unquote. It went on in that vein. Fortunately for him, Crockett did not have to see the man he hated elected president because he was killed at the Alamo first. All right, here we go. This is your last question. See what you can do here. Now, the dirtiest election in American history, at least until yours, was between Samuel Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876. There were widespread accusations of cheating, ballot stuffing, and of course there were smears on all sides. The Tilden people once accused Hayes of doing what? A, killing and eating a child. B, shooting his own mother. Or C, fathering 47 illegitimate children.
The third one sounds the most exciting.
Yo, yeah. You say that, I begin to think maybe Spiro Agnew was right about you. I don't know. But your choice is fathering 47 illegitimate children, which does, now that you mention it, sound like fun. No, the answer was B, shooting his own mother. The slander was spread in anonymous letters sent to Ohio newspapers. It was a swing state back then, too. So, Carl, how did Senator McGovern do in our quiz?
Peter, the senator continues to lose big.
But with honor.
Yes.
But with honor. Well, like I mean, you know, you're a man who rises above the contest he's forced to engage in. So I appreciate it. Appreciate you for doing it here. George McGovern is, of course, a former World War II decorated bomber pilot. He was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives and served with distinction in the United States Senate. He was the Democratic presidential nominee in 1972. He now works to fight child hunger around the globe. George McGovern, thank you so much for joining us. An honor to have you with us. Senator McGovern.
In October of 2008, along with panelists Roy Blunt Jr., Tom Baudette, and Allison Stewart, we were joined by another son of the plains and one of the giants of public radio, Garrison Keillor, creator and host of A Prairie Home Companion. It turns out he doesn't really like being called one of the giants of public radio.
I am not responsible for public radio, Peter.
You're not?
I refuse to accept responsibility.
But it's a pretty good thing.
You people are on your own.
But isn't it true? Let me argue the point. You started the show 35 years ago. Public radio was a pretty minor thing, but you became one of the first real stars. People started turning to public radio to hear your show, and they discovered all those other wonderful things that are now on it.
I don't recognize anything that you're saying. Accomplished. Accomplished. You apply that to pianists.
Well, let me congratulate you anyway. 35 years of Prairie Home Companion. It's quite remarkable.
It's just it happens when you have very poor job skills. Ooh. You might get stuck in the same sort of trench.
You think so?
Yes.
So it was really a failure of you to learn to do anything else. Is what
I wasn't
you're
qualified for anything.
I understand.
As you get older, is it harder and harder to get funny? Be funny?
Could you ask me that question again?
That was Roy. Roy, go ahead.
Could you ask that question louder, please?
Have you gotten older enough that it's harder to be funny now, Gramps?
Getting older is a cinch. You just wait around. You just hang out.
Okay. I have been lucky enough to see you do your show live. It is a remarkable thing. And, of course, to see you do the news from Lake Wobegon, which most people don't know this, that you do not do that from, at least as far as I can see, any prepared notes or paper. You just wing it out there.
The text is projected onto the floorboards.
Oh, how excellent.
And onto the tips of my shoes. So
yes.
As long as I don't make eye contact with the audience, I'm fine.
I was going to ask you, because I know that you've been doing this for so long, but you do many other things. You've written many, many books, including your latest book, Liberty, a novel of Lake Wobegon. And as is, you're a columnist. One of my favorite things that you ever did, actually, was when you wrote an advice column for Salon.com, Ask Mr. Blue. And I just loved that. You were really good at that.
I advised young people such as yourself, Peter, not to get stuck, but to be free and to be adventurous. I recommended adventure. I recommended picking up and pulling out. I was a reckless advice columnist.
Really?
Yep.
You were just sending people. You basically light out for the territories. That was your.
I advised them that, and then my daughter got to the age when I didn't want her to be reading that sort of advice.
I see. You didn't want. You thought maybe she should not light out for the territories.
No, I thought that she should go to the Visitation Convent and stay there until the mood passed.
Well, Garrison Keillor, we're so honored to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Where the men are unemployed, the women are bored, and the children tend to be obese.
Now... Since you are an acknowledged authority on the stalwart, hardworking people of the northern climes, we thought we'd take you all the way around the world to Nauru, a tropical Pacific island. We'll ask you three questions about the island of Nauru. It was inspired by a profile of the island on This American Life. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Garrison Keillor playing for?
Peter, Garrison is playing for Jackson Cooper of Wake Forest, North Carolina.
Are you ready to play, Garrison?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Well, then let's do it now before you become less ready. Nauru is a superlative little island. It is the smallest independent nation in the world, and during the 1970s, it had what other distinction? Was that A, it had the world's highest per capita income, B, it boasted what a travel magazine called, quote, the world's most repulsive beach, or C, it was the only place in the world to find the world's most poisonous frog?
In multiple choice tests I took in college, C was correct about two-thirds of the time.
I just want to point out that I also took those tests and learned that lesson.
I'm guessing C,
the poisonous frog. No, actually it was A, the highest per capita income.
You know, that was going to be my second choice.
I'm sure it was. The island is more or less made of phosphate, a very valuable mineral, or I should say it was made of phosphate. The islanders got extremely rich basically selling off their island. And now that it's all gone, they live poor and unemployed on a narrow coastal ring around a rocky wasteland. Next question. Now, having run out of phosphate, the Islanders have tried to come up with new money-making schemes, including which of these? A, offering their island to movie companies as a stand-in for a hostile alien planet. B, investing in a big Broadway musical. Or C, offering the presidency of their country to anyone willing to pay $40 million for it.
I've so often found that C is the correct answer. Multiple choice test.
Yes. You think so, but you don't think that I would anticipate a mind such as yours working in that sophisticated way and take counteractive measures.
Yeah, I think they've offered the presidency to somebody willing to pay $40 million.
Because wouldn't it be fun to be the president of your own little tropical island, denuded as it might be?
Of course, my second choice would have been A.
I haven't called it yet, so you get to actually vary your choice if you choose.
I'm going to switch to A.
I'm going to switch to A.
I heard something in your voice.
So the movie company is the hostile alien planet.
Yes.
It was B. An Australian financial advisor convinced them to invest $2 million in a musical biography of Leonardo da Vinci that flopped. So that did not work out for them.
I have never trusted this American life.
Really? There's just something so hip about them. It makes
and
me
now
uncomfortable.
I trust them even less.
I think you were wise to do so. Sadly, that remains true. You have one more question. Let's see what we do here. Optimism. C. Just go for C.
Okay.
All right. Last question. Nauru, like a lot of Pacific Islands, has a problem with obesity. It's made worse on Nauru by almost 90% unemployment. To deal with the epidemic, the government did what? A, held the first ever Nauru half marathon, one lap around the island, with five entrants and no finishers. B, they started a Just One Can of Spam Tonight public awareness campaign. Or C, they held a Big Is Beautiful beauty pageant.
I've so often felt that C is
yes.
the answer on these tests.
C? You're going to go for C?
I think that they held a beauty contest.
And you were right, they did.
Oh, right.
It is beautiful, beauty contest. To his credit, the president of the Nauru did try to inspire the people of his island to exercise. He took a walk in public along the island's one airport runway, a whole kilometer. Mm-hmm. He was then airlifted off the island for emergency medical treatment soon thereafter. Carl, how did Garrison Keillor do in our quiz?
Garrison had one correct answer, Peter, but he needed two to win for Jackson Cooper.
Oh, well. Garrison Keillor is an author, storyteller, columnist, musician, and perhaps most famously the host of A Prairie Home Companion on public radio stations nationwide. His latest book is called Liberty, a Novel of Lake Wobegon. Garrison Keillor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.